and I wanted to touch on the stigma of type beats producers and all that, you know, that people think that they are like just, you know, prostituting or being prostitutes regarding their sound and trying to make this kind of sound or the other kind of sound. We have to forget about that and think about strategy and SEO.
Hey, what's up? This is Gabe from Legion Beats and MIDI Money, which is where we help music producers start, grow, and scale their music production businesses. Now, if you'd like to learn more about how I was able to turn Legion Beats into a profitable business and how you can join our community of hundreds of producers all working towards that same goal, head over to midimoney.com/go. All right, welcome to the MIDI Money podcast. Today we've got Brainiac Beats. Man, I'm super excited to catch up with you. We talked for like a couple minutes right now, but before that, it's been a long time. I know you've been up to some really cool stuff, so I'm excited to get into all that. I guess just real quick before we jump in, just so the people kind of know a little bit about you, could you give like just a real quick rundown, maybe, you know, some of the stuff you've done, some of the people you've worked with, that type of thing?
Yes, sir. So my name is Brainiac Beats, El Cerebro in Spanish, and I've been doing music for more than 20 years, also DJing, sound engineering. But yeah, I've been working with the main guys out there in Spain, where I'm from. I'm living in Belgium now, and I've been blessed also to work with a lot of people I look up to from the States, like 50 Cent, Joel Ortiz, the legend Kid Frost, Chino XL. I mean, too many to name, man. Stally from MNG. I've been very, very blessed, and especially not living out there in the States and just being able to travel once, twice a year before the pandemic, of course.
Yeah.
And yeah, man, deep into the music and passionate about this since I was a child.
Cool, man. I'm excited. I'm excited to get into it because I know you've accomplished a lot on the music side, and you're also doing a lot of really cool stuff on the entrepreneurship side, you know, that the other type of creativity, the marketing. Exactly. and you know, all that kind of stuff. So excited to get into it. I think one place I'd like to start with, just because it's something that a lot of people are talking about, and I know it's something that you're passionate about, is I'm looking at your Instagram right here, and I see it says Brainiac Beats presents the first Spanish hip hop instrumental beat NFT ever. So, man, I'm a NFT crypto total beginner. So I would love to know more about, you know, like what is that? And maybe also just, you know, broadly, I mean, it seems like there's so much opportunity there because it's something that a lot of people are excited about. You know, Gary V's, all he talks about now is NFTs, and I'm seeing a lot of music, you know, people talking about NFTs and then of course crypto. And so man, I'd love to get your take on it. So wherever you want to start, I don't know if you want to start with that project or start with kind of how you see NFTs and crypto fitting into music, like wherever you want to go.
I mean, man, this is really, really deep. Like, it's a fucking rabbit hole, the whole crypto world and the NFT uses. It's really amazing.
Yeah.
The first time I heard about this, it was from DJ Jay Skrilla. Mm-hmm. He goes as Rare Skrilla on the socials. And he was talking at one of these conferences that I went to like 4 or 5 years back about crypto music and you know, opening opportunities and new horizons, you know, for the musicians, being able to put your music in the blockchain and have like a record of where the music goes. I mean, the future is going to be bright, I'm telling you, but this is still like in the first steps, even though it's been running for some years. The platforms were like coming and going and it wasn't very established, but right now it's like the whole boom, and I feel like we are getting into some exciting times, and the uses of the NFT are like whatever you can imagine, man. Like it's basically some people are giving rights to the music they produce with the NFT purchase, so you can include your fans or your collectors in the music with you and give them royalties every time the music gets sold again. You can give them access to events. You can do lots of things. I mean, this was mind-blowing for me when I first started, like, really understanding the depth, you know?
Yeah. No, it seems like there's so much potential. It seems like that's probably where everything is going to some extent, whether that's music or business or social media. It seems like there's a lot there, and it still seems like it's in the early stages. It definitely, there was like a very recently, this feels like this boom where now people like me who had never necessarily even really heard about this stuff is now hearing about it. We're talking about it. It still feels to me like maybe we're a ways off from mass adoption. And also to me, to be honest, and I'd love to hear your counter to this or your perspective on this. I'm trying to see the value right now, you know, and maybe the answer is that it is just right. A ton of potential, or maybe not. So maybe, I don't know, like, I don't know if using your new NFT would be a good test case. I guess what I'd love to hear is like some specifics. What's the test case? What's the use case where it's like, oh yeah, this is dope. This is new. This is how we can apply this. Do you have?
I mean, one of the main things of the NFTs is that it's you can give them scarcity, and you can make an NFT that is really special for the collector or the fan to get it. So for example, in my case, I wanted to do something special for this first drop and make it a one of one. So there is only one NFT of this instrumental beat, and only one person will be able to get it. I put it up on Rarible for sale for 2 ETH at the time. Like a couple of weeks back when I put it out, it was like $6,000 or $7,000. Right now it's about $5,000 because it's been, you know, the markets get how do you call it in English?
Volatile, goes up and down.
Yeah, they compensate and they grow too quickly and then they go back a little bit. So right. Yeah, it's always going up basically. It's always like gaining more value, but it's very volatile and unpredictable in a way, right? But yeah, man, like the ability to trace where the music is going with complete transparency, because you can, the moment that someone purchased the NFT, you can see the wallet of that person. And if they have it connected to the socials, you can be talking to them directly. Very different to people listening to your music on Spotify. You don't know who the fuck is listening, or maybe you have some stats from the country they're coming from, but not much, right?
Right.
So this is also like a much better connection between the creator and the consumer without too many middlemen. Cutting through.
So I like that as a concept. To be honest, I'm still not quite seeing it. So okay, let's start with the first part, which is the exclusivity, right? Which is the fungible part, right? That's the idea of the non-fungible token, is that it's one of one. So that part it's a digital, you know, it's a wave or an MP3 or whatever, like it's music, right? So it's one of one, but it's not really, right? Because somebody could just download it and upload it to Spotify or whatever, right?
The thing they can download is the picture or the MP3, but they can never replicate the token, which is right. The NFT. When we are talking about the non-fungible token, NFT, that's a token that says, I created this music in this time, I put it on the blockchain, there's only one copy, and only the person paying for this copy will be transferring the token to their wallet. So you see the provenance, you see the scarcity, or if it's a limited edition of 500 or 5,000, whatever it is, and you have a lot more control to the item. But the item is not the MP3 or the image, is the token on the blockchain. So
right.
It's basically a concept.
Yes.
It's
that's
hard to process at the beginning. Yeah.
That's what it is. It's a concept. And I think, and who knows, maybe looking, maybe I'll look back on this in 6 months or a couple of years and be like, wow, I was so stupid that I didn't Like this is just, it's like in our psyche now that yes, that is one of one because it's a token, because we all agree that this one is the one of one. Yes, you could rip that MP3 however you want and listen to it in a million different ways, but we are agreeing that this is a one of one because we're agreeing that it mm-hmm. is a one of one essentially, right? And there's technology behind it that sort yep. of proves that it mm-hmm. is that one, right? Even though you could have a million clones of it. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's really what yep. it comes down to, right? Is we all disagree. And I guess if you think about the value of a dollar, you think about all kinds of stuff, it's all based off us just agreeing. So I think maybe that's it. I just exactly. have to have that mindset shift of like, okay, this is exactly. the new thing. We are agreeing that it's one of one in a sense. And that's mm-hmm. and therefore it has real value because people will pay more for that one of one, even though they can listen to it and watch it and all that kind of stuff, right? Am I coming yeah. around? Am I getting there?
Yeah. You're getting very, very close. Yeah, because okay. it's really that. Like, what defines the value in something? Basically, how many people are believing in that? Why are we buying gold instead of, you know, all the minerals out there? Because many people go together and, you know, put a value on that, and we are following their rules. Why are we using dollars or euros? Because someone decided that this was, you know, the format, and they will be, you know, pressed and printed this way and not a different way. So the NFT is a new concept inside the blockchain, inside the, you know, the cryptocurrency, but you can also pay for the NFT on fiat. What they call fiat is the normal currency, you know, like dollars or euros. If they take credit card in the platform, you can do that too. So yeah, basically the first time I heard about all this, it was like, what the fuck are they talking about? You know, this sounds like Chinese to me, it's mind blowing. I don't get it. But the more you read and the more you understand, it's like, heck yeah, this is the fucking same model. I'm way more transparent, I'm way more scalable. And in the end, it's gonna be the future because we won't be paying anymore with cash or things like that. Everything will be digital and people will be able to enter experiences thanks to these NFTs that they bought in the past, be it a film, be it a travel, be it anything, you know. So we will have digital wallets going with us, probably in our phone, or if we are not that lucky, inside, you know, the skin or whatever. But it's a future, man. Like I see it very clearly.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. I think it's just it's just all of us agreeing, and that's what makes it real. And really, in a lot of ways, everything you said, we're kind of there. Like physical cash, like dollars, is not very common already, right? People are doing the right. Apple Pay or a credit card, or you know, that type of stuff. So we're basically there already. And then I guess let me ask a dumb question. Why is crypto better than, you know, me using Apple Pay on my phone? I wave it over the thing, I pay for the thing, it's super convenient. Why is blockchain any better than that?
Why? Because it's decentralized. That's the main reason. So there is no Steve Jobs or whoever is, you know, right now in charge of that, saying we are starting this, we are finishing. It's everywhere. It's it's completely decentralized, so nobody can stop it. The information is distributed in nodes in different computers around the world, and I mean, it's unbreakable. Like someone was saying to me, "What if, you know, aliens take over the world and, you know, the the electricity goes out and things like that?" And I said, "Yeah, it should be very difficult to process and to keep the blockchain active, but I'm sure many people into blockchain are using already like renewable energy, and they have like batteries or things like that at home. I don't know how to explain it in English, but like they are
a generator or something.
Yeah, autonomous electricity, and they don't need to be, you know, plugged somewhere. So even if the whole network of electricity goes down, I'm pretty sure the blockchain will still be there in maybe in 1,000 computers instead of, I don't know, 100 million or 10 million computers, you know?
Right. Yeah. And I think, and I don't, to me, that actually isn't an argument, because so much of what we do is already digital. It already relies on electricity, like, you know, so to me that isn't right. as much of a thing. So
and
yeah,
the more you look into how the wallet is built and how the dollar, the euro, every year it can pay for less things, you know. So it's the inflation is there, and we are lesser in the value. We are losing value with this same $100. 10 years ago, they could pay for a lot of things. Right now, they don't pay for much. What happens with crypto is the opposite. The money, if anything, gets more value with time, because you don't see many cryptocurrencies going down, like really down, of the big boys, you know, Bitcoin, Ethereum, etc. So the concept is much more, stable and much more, but reliable for the future. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's something that is centralized, and you know, if it's centralized in Spain and there's a war in Spain and the whole network goes down, everything that was centralized in Spain is, you know, born to crash. So this wouldn't right. be the case with something decentralized and with copies everywhere in the world.
Got it. Interesting. And then, okay, so then to bring it kind of back to music and some of the specific use cases, it sounds like for sure maybe the biggest thing right now is that you can create scarcity from a digital product that in the past that couldn't exist, because they would do the argument that I said earlier of like, well, I can listen to that MP3 anywhere, but now we agree that there's scarcity. Is there, what else? Is there kind of more as far as maybe test cases or ways to kind of, how can maybe some of the producers or artists, whoever might be listening to this, what are some things that maybe they could do to you know, to leverage blockchain and NFTs and stuff?
The uses and the possibilities are endless, and they go as far as our imagination goes, because we can, that's a good thing about this, we can mold it and create it from scratch, and you know, think of new ways to do things. The boys at async.art, they are now selling music as well, and you can customize the music. You can customize, because they sell layers of the music, so you can have the beat, you can have the vocals, you can have the melody, and you can choose from different beats and different melodies and different vocals to create your own version. Imagine the possibilities of that. You know, you are buying an NFT for each of these layers, or you are maybe buying the whole version, the final version that someone decided to put together. I mean, it's in the collectible world, this is crazy. This is like stripping down your music and getting the people that are your fans and that believe in you to participate and to be a part of the project. And nice. Then you can split the royalties, and then you can invite these guys that have been supporting you to be, you know, meet and greets with you, or going with you on tour on your bus. I don't know, like the possibilities are endless, man.
Right. Yeah, I have seen a couple things that are pretty cool, and I do like the idea of I can make a beat, and then that can become this collectible that there's this whole market and aftermarket for, and there's people who collect it, and maybe they're going to rap on it or something and make a song, maybe not, maybe they're going to hold on to it, and then the value goes up. And then what do they call it, where I know there's a thing where you can like say I get 10% every time it gets resold, right? And because mm-hmm. of the technology, that kind of automatically happens. Is there a yeah. name for that?
Like, yeah, they call it basically royalties.
Royalties. Mm-hmm. That's a really cool concept. Mm-hmm. I like that. And I guess you could do that with anything, right? It could be your beat, or it could be a song, or it could be you know, like I'm wondering, like, could I do, I guess I could do like a course, a training that's teaching something, let's say to music producers or whatever, and then that becomes its own NFT, and maybe there's other incentives that come with it. They get a small group coaching session that they only get from this, they get whatever, and then now there's this like aftermarket, like they have that, but now they can kind of resell it. It seems like a cool, you know, a cool idea.
it's a great concept. Like, you can do anything. People are doing like puzzles with the NFTs, so you have to have the 10 NFTs to be able to go to the next level, you know, in the experience with them. So regarding connection between fans and creators, it's the fucking truth. It's like, we don't need middlemen anymore, apart from the little marketplace or whoever is selling the you know, putting the platform. But right. A lot of people are trying to get into this business. Like, it's a really big thing. People don't realize, but Instagram, for example, is already contacting people to try to get into creating their own marketplace. And they want to find out the best way to do it. They want to, you know, pick the brain of the community. But, you know, I believe the way forward is decentralizing, not centralizing. So we should be able to do a mastermind together and keep the community strong and build the future we deserve, man.
Cool, man. It's exciting. It's very cool. Yeah, and I like it. I hope it doesn't seem like I'm like pushing back or
No.
You know, being confrontational. I really want to understand it, so I don't want to just like nod and be like, "Oh yeah, that sounds amazing." If I don't really get it yet, you know what I mean? So, I think it's super exciting.
I was also skeptical and, you know, asking a lot of questions, like how the fact this works, you know, like, because it's hard to grasp. Even though I've been reading and learning, there's always new things, and I'm learning every day, man. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and I guess that, you know, just like music or marketing or entrepreneurship, it seems like blockchain is also another thing that it's, like you said, it's a rabbit hole that you know, there's a million different angles and things you can learn, and probably will continue to grow and evolve and can always learn some new stuff.
I definitely see it as the future.
Yeah. No, it seems like it. Everybody's real excited about it. I see that for sure.
All right.
So, okay, so maybe we can switch gears a little bit. I know one of the things that, you know, I saw kind of on your social media, and one of the things that I know that you're kind of known for is helping producers with YouTube SEO. And that's something that a lot of producers want help with, because that's basically, I would assume, the number one platform where rappers are looking for beats. In fact, I pretty much know it is from running a recording studio for years, that basically every single time rapper comes in, they say, pull up YouTube, here's the name of it. You know, that was like 90% of the artists who came in, you know, when I was running sessions basically every day for like 10 years. So,
right.
So it's obviously pretty, it can be pretty important depending on what model you're kind of, going after. And I guess real quick, before we go into that, is that, for you selling beats, is that kind of your, is that generally, do people find you on YouTube and then it's a link to your beat store? What is your sales process for selling beats?
It depends, but yeah, I would say mostly YouTube, YouTube and the marketplace from BeatStars itself. If you use the tags properly, they can find you through that too. And yeah, man, I should be way more active on socials and all that. So that's basically it, and also the relationships and the customers that keep coming back, you know, repeat customers. That's really important for my business too. Having your own mailing list and keeping them in the loop and giving them value all the time. I think that's pretty key also to, you know, build that loyalty.
So important. Yeah. That's one of the things I just stress over and over, is building that email and text message list, you know, because those are the two things where you actually own that traffic, you own that connection. Right. It doesn't matter if the algorithm changes or you get kicked off of this platform or, you know, all these things that really happen all the time. When you've got that email, you've got that phone number, you own that connection. You could take those emails and phone numbers. You can, you know, hit them up from any platform. So I'm glad to hear you mention that.
No, that's definitely my way of seeing things. You know, like, you cannot depend on X and Y, you know, company or platform. I come from the MySpace era. I got like hundreds of thousands of plays that are, you know, lost forever. And but yeah, man, like, I believe owning your shit is really, really important, from your masters to your mailing list, to everything, man.
Yeah. And you know, use those platforms because that's where your potential customers are, right? Find them there, but then
right.
now take them off that platform and own that. So mm-hmm. with that being said, maybe we can get into some of the YouTube SEO stuff. I know, you know, everybody wants to rank for, I don't know, whatever Drake type beat or whatever. I don't know, whatever is, you know, some of the top ones. What's mm-hmm. what are maybe some tips or what are some of the common mistakes you see producers making?
I would say right now it's not that easy to rank for like very competitive keywords. So one way to play it's going for long tail keywords. So using keywords that are like 3-4 words and not only, you know, rap beats or Drake type beat, because it's already too many people, you know, searching for the same and trying to compete for the same spots. Yeah, first off, I was going through my mind and I wanted to touch on the stigma of type beats producers and all that, you know, that people think that they are like just, you know, prostituting or being prostitutes regarding their sound and trying to make this kind of sound or the other kind of sound. We have to forget about that and think about strategy and SEO and thinking of maybe this guy is naming this beat this way because it's the best way for the other people to find it, not because he created that, not feeling it or, you know, being just for, you know, we can follow the inspiration and then name it type beat depending of whatever type beat it is, right? So yeah
basically you're mm-hmm. saying it doesn't mean you're any less creative. Make the most amazing music, make the best beat you want that's true to you and all that kind of stuff. But then maybe if you want the most people to hear it, then you call it a whatever type beat because that's just the method to get it out there. It doesn't mean that you're, you know, degrading your art in any kind of way, right? Is that kind of...
Exactly, yeah. I've been doing this for more than 20 years and many times I cannot even know or think of an artist that could use these beats because they are experimental, or but you can use all the kind of names, or you know, call it ambient, chill, you know, trip hop, whatever it is. But you have to find what's the best definition for that beat, and that's, you know, type beat. It's not that you are faking it or trying to be someone else. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to say that. But yeah, regarding SEO, is getting more and more complicated because, as you know, there is a high competition to get on these keywords. So going on the long tail keywords is a good strategy. Also use your description boxes to really describe what's the beat about and really put as many keywords in there as you can, because that's the way people are going to find it. And the tags are also very, very important. Like playing with the tags, not putting a lot of different kind of keywords in the tracks, but playing around maybe 2, 3, 4 main keywords in these tags and making different combinations of them so that YouTube really understands and the algorithm understands what's your niche and they can classify the beat and put it on the right, you know, how do you say that? On the right spot, on the right section of the algorithm, you know?
Right. So using those long tail keywords, meaning you're probably not going to rank for Drake type beat, but maybe you could rank for, I don't know, emotional Drake type beat 2021, right. You know, whatever, something like that. And maybe that's not the best example, but that's sort of the concept, right? That you'd have a longer keyword, you know, or sequence of keywords because there's going to be less competition for that sort of sequence, right?
Yeah. I think it's way better to find like a niche that you are really good at and trying to dominate this keyword, even if it's like a 3-4 words keyword, but being the best and being in the top three, that's going to bring, of course, not so much traffic as the Drake type beat or whatever, but the sales will be more exactly what the people were looking for, you know? The longest is the keyword, the more accurate is the search. And people really look for long keywords a lot. You can do your research and look for the money keywords, as they call it, like the keywords that people are looking for before they make the purchase.
Yeah. What's your process for figuring out what those good keywords might be?
I use a tool called Morning Fame. I'm not affiliated with them or anything like that, but they have been the more thorough in understanding and building the whole platform and the whole tool, you know? It's like a mix of TubeBuddy, VidIQ, Google Trends, and everything put together. It's called Morning Fame. Wow. And they are, yeah, in my opinion, they are the best. You can really understand what's the best keywords that you could use and the description, and they give you rates of how close you are to being, you know, closer to the perfect description and the ratings you could get. It's very, very easy to grasp and but very deep at the same time. They have a lot of tools in there.
Cool. All right, Morning Fame. I'm looking at their page right now. I've actually never heard of it. Of course, you know, TubeBuddy, VidIQ are ones that I hear a lot of people talk about. I use TubeBuddy regularly. I've used VidIQ before. Morning Fame, I have to take a look.
Yep.
And so does it do something similar? Like, I know one thing that
one guy.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, I know one thing like that TubeBuddy does is it'll give keywords sort of a rank. So it's have like the competition, like how many people are basically how many other people have uploaded, how many people are using that keyword. And then what is it? The volume of searches, right? And you want, you know, the best case scenario is there's a high volume of searches and a less amount of competition. Of course, that's going to be the rare thing to find. So you kind of find that balance, right? Is that kind of the same process on how you do it on Morning Fame?
Yeah. It's basically the same, but more advanced, because you have all the things to look at, and they classify the keywords, and they put up there the ones you should choose and the ones you are not so probably ranking in those, you know. So they explain it very well, and you can customize also your search and save the template that you used, and, you know, save a lot of time.
Wow, cool. What about, I've heard this as something that's helpful, is kind of look for when artists are going to be dropping their album, because then they're a little, you know, it's like Google Trends. They're more in the news. People are listening, you know, whoever, J. Cole just dropped an album, so more people are looking for J. Cole type beats. Is that something that you've messed with? Do you think that works? Does it backfire maybe because there's more competition?
I mean, it doesn't go with my philosophy to say, like, I'm not trying to chase, you know, attention so much, like to go, but it's helpful. But in that way, yeah, you are maybe changing your strategy to follow the trend or to follow whoever is trendy and buzzing right now. No? So I prefer to keep my stuff more, you know, authentic and original, and just being very careful how I name it, how I the keywords I use, and the best presentation for it, you know.
Got it. So you're more, if I understand correctly, it's like you're consistently using a lot of the same keywords on multiple videos. Is that right? And that sort of builds your authority for those keywords, as opposed to here's a J. Cole type beat, here's a Drake type beat, here's a whatever. You're more consistently doing certain type beats or certain long tail keywords over time. And then YouTube sees that as, okay, this person has authority for that. And that's sort of a more of a long-term strategy.
Yeah, that's very, very true. You have to be consistent and try to focus on a very small group of keywords and go for that niche, instead of trying to, you know, pick one style here, one style there, and, you know, focusing on one niche and being consistent in it is really important. I remember a consultation I had with Dreamlife way back, where he was like trying to step up his game even more, even farther, and he didn't think about, even though he had a lot of beats with hooks, he didn't think about putting beats and hooks in the title of every beat that he drops. And once he did that and also included beats with hooks in the name of the channel, he, you know, a couple of days later, he was up there with the channel title Beats with Hooks, because he was, you know, going for that niche and establishing himself as an authority in there, you know. So yeah, being also picky and thinking about the names you use in the description, not only in description and text, but also in the title, mm-hmm. and also in your channel name. The channel name can also, if you are specialized in one niche, put that in the channel name, because it will help with the ranking and the SEO.
Uh-huh. Like yours is.
And you can always
Beats, Beats with Hooks. You have that right in the name of your.
Exactly.
So you're gonna rank, and you're putting that in a lot of your titles, a lot of your tags. So now you're kind of building that authority over time, and that's helping you rank for when people are searching for, I'm looking at this one, electro R&B type beat with hook or whatever. You're gonna pop up.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. That's quite kind of important. Also, uploading the beats in 4K quality instead of just the normal 1080. If you upload in 4K, I believe for a while YouTube was giving priority to those. I'm not sure 100% right now, because they keep, updating the algorithm. So we have to keep understanding it and studying it.
Yeah, for sure. What about, so I see like on your description, you've got some different links, buy with hook, get free beats, beat store. I've heard, and I've no idea if this is true or not, that if you have a bunch of links that can, decrease your ranking possibly. Now, obviously the whole point, like we just talked about, is to get people off this platform onto yours. Does that bring it down? Would it make sense maybe if you say, okay, for this one, the most important thing is this one call to action or these two, as opposed to, having all seven or eight?
I mean, do both. Do A/B testing, trial and error, because things keep changing. In my experience, a lot of rumors that go around, they don't really work. Like keyword stuffing, everyone was saying, you cannot put too many keywords in the description, you're going to get banned. Maybe some people got banned. It never helped my rankings. In the contrary, they helped me a lot. So trial and error, man.
I see. I'm looking at your description. I see. I just scrolled down. You got paragraphs. You are keyword stuffing.
Right.
You know what? I actually did get, I don't know what the words, I didn't get banned, but I got, they took some videos down for me, but this was years ago. This was like, 4 years ago or something, for that reason. So I don't know if they're still doing it, but it looks like it's working for you.
They're not doing it with me, at least. Another thing you can use is the hashtag inside the description. The option to put three hashtags that will be highlighted below the video in blue, and people can click on them and go to, the rankings on that. So that's another way to get some traction.
Nice. And would you usually, for those, are you basically taking like what your top tags would be also, or do you have like any different strategy for the hashtags compared to the tags?
Again, I try not to go for rap beats or things like that, because it's quite saturated, after a while. So I try to go for my niche, beats with hooks, or other things that really define what's the specific beat.
Got you.
It's not going to get a lot of traction, but it's a little bit done. Every little bit helps, right?
Yeah, for sure. It all adds up. What about your thumbnail strategy? Anything, any advice, anything you've noticed is working or not working?
Well, in my case, I'm trying to use white as the main, background color, because when you go through all the thumbnails, if you see something white and then shapes, it's gonna attract your eyes differently, I believe. It stands out in a way. But yeah, it's pretty hard to stand out nowadays, because people are using all kind of, flashy colors and highlights. But try to experiment again and do different shapes. And also try to be consistent so that your channel, your YouTube channel looks, in Spain we say homogéneo, which is maybe homogenic.
Okay, yeah.
In English.
Like consistent.
Consistent.
Nice. Yeah. So no, it kind of has that. And is that more, is that an SEO thing or is that more just like a branding thing? So people know like, oh, this is Brainiac. They kind of recognize.
Yeah, that's branding. Yes, straight branding. So you look professional to the people. Because if I go into a YouTube channel and every thumbnail is different, it looks a little bit like a mess, you know, and it doesn't look organized. So just keep things organized.
Got it. Any specific strategy as far as comments, doing a pinned comment, replying to comments?
Right. I think doing a pinned comment is quite important. Replying to comments is also important to, again, go with the community mentality that YouTube wants the people to go with. They built also this community tab that you can use because not many people use it, but you can throw in there a poll maybe and ask your people what kind of bits they would like you to do or what kind of bits they prefer, or just some, you know, funny things, or use it as another social media instead of just posting bits, and that will make, you know, easier connections with your fan base.
Yeah, get that feedback. Mm-hmm. And then also I think that's another gem too of like, this is how YouTube wants to be used. I think that's a big key for being successful on any social media platform is like, well, how do they want you to use it? Because they're going to reward you for doing that. So figure that out, make them happy, and then they'll reward you back.
Exactly. With free promo, basically, you are, you know, pleasing the algorithm and it will help you back. They are using also the YouTube Shorts. Not everybody can use
YouTube
them.
YouTube Shorts, yeah. It's almost like TikTok or Reels or whatever. It's a short video.
Exactly, yeah. And you can do anything and everything in there, like a preview of the bit or just some funny stuff, you know, but it's going to get some traction eventually if you use it properly. I haven't used it myself because I haven't had the time, but I've been teaching some people to use it, and they have been seeing a lot of good traction, similar to the Reels in Instagram.
Right.
It's basically anytime you see like a new feature added to the social network, you should use it because they are testing and they are giving you free promotion.
Yeah, right. They always want whatever new thing to be successful. So when it rolls out, if you use it, they're usually going to reward you with a lot more of that organic traffic than
than
at other times. Especially because I think a lot of times they're looking at, okay, well, I see, you know, whoever TikTok is doing, you know, short videos. So then Instagram starts doing Reels. So then YouTube starts doing Shorts. So not only do they want to reward you because it's new, but they want to win that market. They want to be the place for that thing. So they really are rewarding you in those early stages, I think, to want you to be on there. You know, it's like, this is a little bit of an older example now, but like when Instagram started doing stories and they sort of stole Snapchat, I remember at that time I was kind of like, well, I signed up for Snapchat, I guess I should do it too, you know, it's starting to blow up. But then on Instagram I would post a story, I get way more engagement, you know, way more views, way more everything than I was getting, and I was like, all right, yeah, I'll just stick with Instagram.
Right.
So that's what they want, is they want to win, so they're going to reward you by giving you that that more organic traffic. So YouTube Shorts,
you want to get there early so that you can make, you know, the most of that organic traffic.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Whew. All right. Well, man, tons of gems. Talked about NFTs, talked about YouTube SEO. I think it's about time to wrap it up pretty soon here. I guess before we get out of here, I'd love to know, one, if there's anything else that we missed that you'd like to cover, what you're excited about moving forward, and where people can find you.
Well, yeah, my website is brainiacbits.com. And you can find me anywhere as Brainiac Beats in all the socials. And right now I'm very excited with the crypto world and the NFTs and all the possibilities out there. I believe, as I said before, that this is the future. So I, again, want to be there early and make the most of that organic traction. The same principles apply.
Smart. Love it.
Yeah, man. And yeah, not much, man. I'm working on singles with people from Spain. I've always liked making connections between Spanish artists and international artists, and I keep doing that in a different way, because in the past I released, maybe you see that up there, vinyls, you know, doing this kind of collaborations. My album Symbiosis from 2007 was a pretty nice success in the underground scene, and I'm trying to, you know, bring that to the NFT world and to the new world.
Very cool, man. Pioneer out here, blazing trails. Appreciate it. Make it, you know, make it easy for us later, because you're doing it first.
Paving the way, man.
Cool, man. Well, hey, it was great chatting with you, man. I just see the passion you have for it, and you're just a smart dude, and so I appreciate you explaining to me, especially like the crypto stuff that I'm a total beginner at. And man, I think everybody who listened and watched today got a ton of gems, so I appreciate you taking the time.
Oh, thank you for inviting me, man. I really look up to you, and you're the fucking boss with the, you know, the funnels and the another kind of new strategy for selling bids, right? Gotta be creative,
trying to be out here blazing trails. Gotta do it. All right, man. Appreciate you.
It was a pleasure, man.
Thank you for listening to the MIDI Money Podcast. If you're not subscribed already, please be sure to do that right now on YouTube or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you enjoyed this episode, I would really appreciate if you do me a quick favor and rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts, or comment and like the videos on YouTube. You know, those ratings, reviews, those comments, they all show that people are getting value, helps the algorithm, and helps get this podcast out to more producers. So it means so much to me if you'd be willing to take a couple minutes to do that. Oh, and if you'd like to learn more about how I was able to turn Legion Beats into a profitable business, and how you can join our community of hundreds of producers all working towards that same goal, head over to midimoney.com/go.